Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. My thing shows unmuted, and it's not. It's this thing, this interview, this interface, folks. What happens is it shows we're unmuted, but if I do that before we start recording, it just doesn't allow. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. We're here now. All we did was say, hey, it's me. It's Kevin Catani. We're both here. We're talking NXT. We won't give you the preamble again, but we are ready to talk a little bit of wrestling. So now we'll give Ryan a second. And let's talk main event real quick before we bring him on. Main event, Wes Lee versus Tony D'Angelo for the North American Championship. You knew probably that somehow Wes Lee would retain here because we are moving on to Dijak, who I think is almost a lead pipe cinch to win this championship, unless he's going to feud with Tony D, and he too will go up against Lee in a match that Lee is the beneficiary of a distraction finish or whatnot, and then Dijak will go on to the main championship, which it sure seems like if Waller doesn't win it here, and I would be on board with Waller being the champion. I think he is exactly the kind of heel who should beat Breaker, just A, for the lulz, but B, because he's the kind of guy who should cheat his way to doing it and sucker Breaker into doing really dumb stuff. That's just the kind of dynamic these two should have. But if Waller doesn't win it, they're going to need Dijak in that main event scene, because who else? So, on the main event, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm just happy that Dijak is back, and I hope that I don't want to say they let him pick up where he left off, because certainly he's been down the road a bit since then, but I think he was one of those guys when he was still feuding with Keith Lee that we said a couple times we could see some kind of gold around his waist. And I certainly wouldn't be mad if it was the NXT title at some point here in the near future. And so I hope that this is sort of a more than rehab-y start, if you will, if we'll keep the baseball analogy going. I hope this is more than a rehab start, and I hope that he's able to sort of pick up some momentum down here, and I imagine time will tell. I sort of got the vibe that Wes was going to retain. It was just going to be a matter of how. And I really did actually. I actually thought that it was going to be the tried and true sort of Stacks trying to do something to Wes, which led to him knocking Tony D'Angelo out or something like that. So I'll take a Dijak distraction as a curveball there. But either way, yeah, I think the conclusion was a bit foregone. And to be frank, I guess I'm surprised. I don't feel like I've seen Tony in a while on TV, unless I've just passed out during those segments. But the one thing that blew my little mind during this was Vic and then sort of Booker echoing how he is behind Tony D. And I don't know that we've met anybody other than the guy they sent to the bottom of the river and the guy that gave Tony his ring. So I don't know who this family is, but wherever they are, they're not in Orlando, because I've never seen them.
Yeah, I felt the same thing. And technically, they were calling, when they had Legado, they were all part of the family or whatnot. But I was very amused, too, that they were saying, what could this do for the family? And like, the two people does not the family make. You can't call that the family. They're not a faction. They're a pair of dudes. They're a tag team. You can't call them the family, or you're going to need some more members if you do so. Okay, so main event out of the way. I actually quite liked this main event. I thought it was fine. Booking-wise, a little suspect. to make Lee look so weak in victory. But I actually was kind of impressed with Tony D here, which is not something I say very often. Like, he's not a favorite of mine on this brand by any means. I think he's very slow and methodical and with a really dull moveset. Tonight he was slow and methodical, but I really could see that his moveset had picked up since the last time he was on. So it does seem like while he was out, he was working on some things to bring into the repertoire. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just in a good mood because I just kind of mostly saw what I liked what I saw this week. But I really was impressed that he looked like he was a more fully formed wrestler here. Maybe he's not destined to be on the bottom of the river next to Two Dimes after all. Okay, let's go to a call. This is from Ryan. Almost positive he'll actually hear us this time. Let's hope. Ryan, are we no longer muted?
Yeah, I can hear you this time around.
Okay. Yeah, this interface, not my favorite, but it's the only blog talk we have. What did you think of the show today?
Oh, I enjoyed the show, especially with the Battle of the Boar, which is a favorite of mine. I got a question on that Battle of the Boar match. Have you heard if that boar's had like a giant increase in business? Since you say that's like an actual real boar, I would think people would start going to that boar a lot more frequently if they knew that's what they were talking about on NXT.
I think that's possible. And they would get some spike. Wrestling is still a niche product. But I feel like if I was there, I would at least be amused to go see there if I just to see what it's like, if the bar is all that. And if, you know, you could run into some of the workers there. I would assume they're using something that's close enough that it actually makes sense. But it's pot. Location scout that went a little further to find something that more fits the vibe of the Henley Brooks and Josh kind of thing. So I don't know. As somebody who has been in a movie that had a scene with a bar, when you're doing the work, you're actually killing their business. Like, you got to rent it out and then deny the chance for all their customers to go there because you're shooting content, but it's not like they've shot a lot there. I don't know that they've seen a spike, but I would guess there are a number of fans who would go there to see. Now, I don't know the name of the place, and I don't know if that's even being promoted on the show. I would feel like if they're going to allow their place to be used, he would really want to negotiate the name of the place, but you can't do that and keep kayfabe alive. So unfortunately, there is that. And I'm going to assume, Kevin, you also do not know the answer to that question.
No, I do not have a factual answer to that question either.
All right, Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question on this Drew Gulick Invitational match. Were you familiar with any of the workers that took part in the demonstration tonight, or were they unknown to you?
Okay, so they're known to me as names, but only as names. I think it's possible I've seen the second one work, but that is it, Tavian Heights. I know we've seen him in a backstage segment or two, and I'm guessing we've seen the other ones in backstage stage segments or two also. I am sure that the last two have been on NXT Level Up. I am not sure about the first. The first one, they called Luca. I feel like I've heard Tom say that name at some point on Level Up or on Bonus Point, his show about Level Up. Tavian Heights is somebody who has worked. He's been an indie wrestler, but I don't think that's been his name. And then Miles Bourne is the last one, and I know he's had quite a few matches on Level Up, going back at least a few months. And I looked into those, and I really wanted to watch the matches, but unfortunately I would have had to watch those matches while I was watching and recapping these matches, so I wasn't able to do that. But these are guys that I believe are all signed. I would have to get confirmation on the first one, but I think so. Tani, are you watching any of Level Up, and did you recognize any of the three on site?
Yeah, the only one that I recognize was actually the middle guy, too, Tavian. And I think that between the couple episodes of Level Up I've seen, and I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like he's been a security slash event management slash guy in the chairs that someone's going to get thrown, like one of those type guys. His face looks very familiar. But I didn't recall the other two.
Yeah, Miles Bourne, for just a second, I thought, that looks like two dimes, but it was only a second. So wondering if he was back from the dead. But no, indeed, this is a name that I have heard Tom speak on Level Up. So, yeah, I think these guys are around, but given that they were used for this segment, they're probably still a while away from doing anything bigger. But if there is going to be a flood of call-ups, and Royal Rumble time and post-WrestleMania time are the times that they make those call-ups, there will be spots to be filled, and maybe these will be three of the guys that we start to see on a more regular basis. Ryan, go ahead.
Question on the Schism. Looking impressive tonight. Have you ever heard of WWE considering doing a six-man title, like belts, like AEW does, or you think that's something they'll always stay away from?
I wouldn't expect this company to do it. They would kind of have to do the same thing where they could be on either show. I'm a fan of fewer championships and not more. My favorite company is New Japan. Go figure. They got about two championships per every wrestler. They've got so many belts in that company. It drives me crazy. And they're adding two. It's not the solution to problems, belts. But I digress. I would be a little surprised, I think, if this regime even were to bring in six-man championships. I think it's the kind of thing that gets forgotten often. I know AEW has kind of forgotten about these at times. New Japan has them, and they'll forget about them for... I know that in the last few years, they've joked on the air that they went like 10 months or 11 months without a defense. So there was this ultra-long championship reign, and it didn't mean anything because nobody could ever remember who the champions were, because there was always something more pressing, more interesting to do with the guys who actually held those belts. It seems like the kind of thing that would only pop up if you have a ton of natural tag teams and a ton of factions in your company. That's the only way it would make sense. And AEW has a ton of factions, and New Japan has a ton of factions. In WWE, that's not necessarily the way that they roll. So I don't necessarily see it happening. I don't see a number of challengers to make them viable, Kevin.
Sorry, I was searching for the mute button. My screen wouldn't come awake. I also don't see them doing that, and I feel like as much as I do love more than two-on-two matches when it fits, like in this, typically it's the WWE's vehicle towards getting feuds out of this, and certainly the natural break here is Gacy and Odyssey, and then the Dyad and Blade and Inoue. And I agree. I don't think more belts is a good thing. They have a hard enough time. They were having a hard enough time getting all the love that they have combined several of the major belts on the main roster. So the last thing we need is another belt that way. But I did like the match, too. I thought both sides showed – a nice mix of sort of big man power plus the speed of the cruiserweighty guys. And I actually was quite impressed with how Schism worked together, especially towards the end. And I actually look forward to this feud going. I think they've got a good thing going here. And I'd like to see in however it branches and moves. You know, I think what we're missing, and I don't know how far away, and I forget her name, The Rock's daughter. I don't know how far we are from
Ava Raine is what they're rolling with.
There it is, Ava Raine. I apologize. I don't know how far away we are from her getting some meaningful work time, but if they want to keep this feud going and they want to bring her into it, then Odyssey's group would have to get a female on board. And I don't know if there's an available one that would make sense right away, but in any event, I like the match, and I think that they need to keep that going.
Yeah, if they were to add somebody, I would expect it to be someone who's either been lower down the card. I can't think of her name. She just did a job a couple of weeks ago, and I really like her, and I'm forgetting her name, and I feel terrible about it. It'll come to Elmari Miller. Yeah, they could do something like that and elevate her, or they could bring somebody who's been sort of working in the background. I don't know, like an Ariana Grace, which she – I'm not really sure yet because I've only seen a little bit of her. So there you go. I, too, like this match. 11 minutes, 17 seconds, Schism over Odyssey and Enofe and Blade. I also liked that this didn't feel like a tornado match all the way through, that they just worked a simple match that was mostly easy to cover. Like, it broke down a couple times, as these matches are supposed to do, especially near the end, but it wasn't just Bonzo Gonzo in there all the time. There you are. Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead.
Question on Wendy Chu and the Cora Jade match. Announcers were stressing that they were seeing like a new side of Wendy Chu. And a while back, I saw a Wendy Chu match live where they took the pillow away from her and security like pretty much took it all the way to the back. And Wade Keller told me that he thought maybe they were dropping the sleepy character. Do you think that's what maybe is going to go on, that gradually this sleepy character goes away and she becomes a more serious character?
Yes. I think that they can kind of have this both ways. I thought the character as it was brought in was absolutely dead miserable. It was my least favorite thing on the show on the week it debuted, and it remained that way for a while. Now, she as a worker, I like, and I've been liking her like since before that, when she was Mei Ying and back when she was Karen Q. But she is... I just did not think that character had legs. Like, it was very, very gimmicky, this idea of someone who always needs to sleep. I just don't know what we're supposed to cheer for as far as that goes. And then they tried to do the thing where she's pretending to sleep on her opponent's leg and Vic starts whispering. And I'm like, give it up. This is terrible. But as they shifted it more to it, just wanting to be her kind of that as a mind game and as a silly thing and as a whimsical thing and her having fun, but also being a bit of a bastard in there. Like, she's very naughty, I think is a good word for the way that she's acted at times. But I thought that this was a necessary progression in the character of Wendy Chu, where now she can be badass and it can be believable when she's driven to that point. And she went over in a match that I did not think they'd put her over in, but I guess Cora can eat a couple of pins and kind of get away with it. 6 minutes, 9 seconds, Wendy Chu over Cora Jade. And Wendy Chu, the wrestler, I was already on board. And now Wendy Chu, the character, I'm finding my way around to that as well, Kevin.
Yeah, and I actually, the first note I made at the beginning of that match was, oh, they're giving Wendy a bit more of a serious side. And I think that we've seen that. Who have we seen that in? In different spurts with Matt Riddle. We've seen that in different spurts with The New Day, and there's a couple others where they're sort of known for their antics, and then all of a sudden they sort of flip a switch. And I think it will behoove her to have that approach if A, she wants to be taken more seriously, and I think B, if the company is saying to her, listen, we're ready to sort of move you into that upper mid card, but we, you know, we've got to see X, Y, and Z. And I think she's certainly capable of it physically. I think I was surprised too that she got the win. And I actually really loved, I feel like I've seen enough of her matches, but I don't know if that's a new finisher or just something she finished the match with, but I called it in my notes, a top rope Vader bomb. But it just looked and sounded and just felt impactful. And Cora being more on the slight end of physical stature, I mean, it just looked like she got squashed. And so I think I would have been more surprised had she kicked out of it. But I think the new serious Wendy Chu, who wears modified PJs, will serve her well as she continues to sort of refine who she will be, especially going into 2023.
Yeah, I would have felt really bad for the worker if she would have had to start a third character. Like if they had to just get like go to the drawing board yet again and start over with her, just because they already did that once with Mei Ying, which I thought was, I don't know what they were going to do with Mei Ying exactly. I always worried about what kind of legs that had. But then, even though I worried about that, I thought it was all dropped way too abruptly and at a time when I was always looking forward to those segments. So, oh well, what are you going to do? We thank you, Ryan. As always, we've also got Sean from Murfreesboro on the line. I think that's still where he's from. He can tell us if he's moved or anything like that. My notes that I got from Wade are very old, so I don't know if that's still the case. But Sean, if you can hear me, say hey.
Yes, sir. Kelly, it's me. I'm glad to finally get on here and talk to you guys again. I missed y'all. Kelly, how are you? Kevin Picatinny, man. I need to talk to this guy. How excited am I, man? I'm just a lucky guy. How are both of you guys tonight?
I'm doing well. Things have been good around here. I have no major complaints. The store is doing well. The kids are doing well. The family is all well. Catani, life good?
Life is fabulous. And Sean, let me just say, I'm currently working through the Friday SmackDown call, and you are actually currently speaking on it as I hit pause when I got out of the car today. And so it is always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm glad you're back in the action. Everything's really good here too. My daughters, it's so fun to watch the holidays through a 4- and a 2-year-old's eyes. And we're just sort of ready to get 2023 off to a good note here. So glad to have you on board today.
You know, when I threw to you and asked how you were doing, it seemed like there was an extra long pause. And I'm like, oh, man, things are not good over there. And this podcast is about to get weird. Thankfully,
no, well, see, here's the problem.
Not the case.
The app, the way that I'm connected to Skype now, I have to, like, sort of not force close the app, but, like, I have an iPhone, and so it's not just letting me touch the screen to bring the mute button up to unmute it. I have to physically, like, half minimize it, half not, to, like, have it reopen again just to find the mute button again, which is very weird. So I apologize. The pauses, I'm trying to predict when you're going to throw to me, and I've been wrong 2 of the 3 times, and that's why that pause has been there.
The technology of podcasting should not be so primitive. And yet, here we all are. Sean, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I guess I did want to just go back to the, because Ryan brought it up, and, you know, he had every right to. But, you know, with the Wendy Chu, you know, stuff, I was kind of surprised, honestly, because I did like that Wendy came out more, you know, fired up and ready to go and just kind of ran out and attacked, which I think, you know, with the feud they've had, I think she had to do that. But at the same time, I was still surprised Wendy got the win, because I feel like they're building more into Cora, and so I was like, kind of, it threw me off. But I'm a fan of, you know, Wendy's in-ring talent. I mean, she's got a lot of talent in the ring, and I thought the match itself was very good. And so were you guys surprised that she won, knowing what they've done with Cora, or do you think it was fine? And because I think she's lost to Cora, the way she lost was like, well, you know, maybe they'll get the win back. But what did you think? Were you guys surprised that Wendy won tonight?
Very. I was straight up pretty surprised at both the first two results, the other one being Julius over JD. I don't think that's wrong by any means. I just was surprised they did it. To the point where when the Eichemann Giro versus Scripps match started, I was like, could Giro be winning his first match here? Actually, maybe he got one. I don't remember. But he's got a lot of losses. But yeah, they threw a curveball with this one. I didn't think that this one was 100%er, but I would have probably called it about an 80%er. But when Wendy hit that badass move, I said, this is probably got to be over. So she not only beat her, but she beat her in, I mean, relatively quick. It wasn't a lot of work. It was 6:09. It wasn't as long as they usually have their opener and closing matches. And it didn't get either of those spots. So it just kind of, I don't know. It was, I don't think it's a de-emphasis for Cora by any means, but I think Cora has gotten to a point where they trust she can bounce back even after this kind of loss. Wendy, on the other hand, as a babyface and as the kind of babyface she is, I think she would have been in a little more trouble from a perception standpoint if she took a couple of more high-profile losses to non-champions. And that's just my read on the situation that of these two, even though Cora was going to come away with it, Wendy really needed it quite a bit more, Kevin.
Yeah, and I think I was surprised, but in a good way. The other sort of sub-theme of this episode, as I was watching, it seemed to be a lot of mission statements and sort of renewed hey, here's why we're here and here's what we're going to do. And so really and truly, I wouldn't be so surprised if maybe in the next week or two, we get Wendy, you know, either in a backstage interview or sort of in her own package where she sort of is committing to, you know what, I thought I could come in here and play around. And it's very apparent that the talent in this locker room is far better than any game I wanted to play. And so now I'm here and I want to win. And perhaps some new ring gear. We can ditch the sleep mask and the pillow and the modified jammies and see if we can't just get a more about her business Wendy Chu, because certainly, like I said earlier, she's got the physical talent. I think, she can connect with the audience. And so maybe 2023 will be a new mission statement for her where she very much recommits herself to wanting to win and wanting to be a force in the women's division, and I'm here for it. So
I like the gear in that it's so different. Like it actually sets her apart from the group. That's my favorite thing about it. Now you got to explain that if she goes to the main roster, and it's got to be, she's not the easiest character to just move up to the main roster and have people understand her without going back to the sleeping stuff, which in no way am I advocating. Cause it didn't work in front of a crowd that tries really hard to like everything that they are given, then it's not going to work on a national level either. So yeah, I think it's going to be real interesting what they do with Wendy when they bring her up, because she can't just be another cool badass baby face who can work. They've got that and they're not popping because they're not doing enough to really characterize all of them. I'm going a lot more big picture than I thought I was going to tonight, but what are you going to do? Sean, I'm going to throw to you so I can cut myself off.
Oh, you're fine. No, it was good. I like Wendy a lot, so I'm curious to see, you know, what they do with her, because she's got a lot of talent. Two quick comments I wanted you guys to maybe comment on. The first was, I think the Scripps stuff is awful. It's just awful. They've got to stop with that. You know, okay, he's a high flyer, whatever. Like, that's just an awful gimmick. Like, they need to get rid of it. So I wanted to bring that up because I just think it's not doing anybody any favors. Ike Majiro's very talented. He just looks like a goof now, and it's unfortunate because he's got a lot of talent in the ring, but that's a whole other story. The second thing was with Grayson, he's such a good heel, man. Like, McKenzie's saying, we've got to go to a video. He wanted you to see a video package. And the way they let Braun just watch the whole video package, at first I'm thinking, okay, Braun, if you're, like, getting ticked off, just stop it right where it is and throw it away. Like, why would you just, like, listen to the whole thing? I thought that was hilarious. But so what did you think about those two things? First, Scripps, you know, just being an awful gimmick, and then second, the Grayson stuff. Because I think I'm almost wanting him to, because I do think when you guys have talked about Braun being stale, I thought – oh, maybe they're being a little harsh. Maybe it's like, maybe I haven't seen enough. Maybe I need to, you know, go see more. But then, you know, tonight it was kind of like, yeah, there's definitely something missing. I think he's really talented. He's obviously a Steiner. But there's something missing there. So what do you guys think about those two things I brought up?
Yeah, I mean, seeing Breaker pick up the TV and throw it against the lockers because the TV was the jerk that told him that Grayson wasn't there. It was a very, very Steiner moment for Breaker to take it out on the TV. They just present him as such meatheads. I thought that segment was wonderful all the way through. I really liked Waller just showing off, putting over the Sydney Opera House, but then mentioning how finally, for the first time, a real star was there when, like, everyone's been there. I love his swagger as a heel. I just think this really is the guy. I don't think they're going to put him over Breaker, but I think that this is the guy that you use to transition away from Breaker, because you can't just have another big tough guy beat him. For me, it's got to be a character like this, so you're not undercutting Breaker as a big tough guy. He's got to be outsmarted and outwitted and just out-cheated. Just have him cheat, please, to win this championship. heels ought to cheat. So, yes, I also thought it was funny that McKenzie had wheeled a TV up in front of Braun Breaker in order to say, yeah, we're going to show you this video. Like, it was really dumb, but I was feeling it. So they got away with it. As for Scripps, I don't know whether to mock the gimmick, cause I'm not even sure what the gimmick is. I don't know. Even with the stuff that they did to promote the character, it's not really being used in the ring in any meaningful way. So I'm not sure what I'm supposed to take from this. And then they go really old school and have him just steal a thing, which is like late 80s, early 90s, WWF superstars kind of thing. I'm not really feeling this. The crowd's not really feeling this. He can work. He can move, but they gotta get him something stat and something about that gear in the face area might have to change, Kevin.
Yeah, so I'll continue on with Scripps and then loop back to Grayson. But what's funny to me about his clothing is that when he was Reggie, everything was form-fitting. Everything was whatever. And now he's got this mask where he has, like Star Warsian, like, mandible flaps that just don't fit. They look like extra fabric. And, like, part of me, and I'm going to use some callbacks both on this and the Grayson Waller, and forgive me if I'm overshooting in both ways. But, like, in looking at what he was when he was Reggie to now, like, it almost feels like they're Dusty Roading him with, like, what is the most ridiculous costume we can give you? What is the most ridiculous? Like, his name is sort of the early 90s equivalent of when we put a Z on the end of everything. Like, There's a Y in there. There's a, like, it's like, let's do everything we can to make this guy, just let him know that he is the bottom of the barrel and see what he does. And he's so athletically gifted that, like, he's showing them that he's too good athletically. But, like, part of me thinks that this has to be some sort of rib coming from somewhere high up the line where he just doesn't have the cachet to, like, speak up for himself to say, okay, can I either tell everybody, ha, 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 here you thought I was Scripps, but it's really Reggie, or, like, just give him a costume and let him start fleshing himself out. I agree. I don't get it. And I really like Giro, too, and I was going to say, prior to what effectively was a squash, I loved of the mission statement episode that they let him do that backstage segment in Japanese. And I'm always a fan of letting folks whose first language is not English speak in their native tongue, because then you really see their body language. You see their facial expressions, their nonverbals are so much more authentic because they don't have to search through the Rolodex in their head for the English equivalent that they may not even be sure is right. And so I loved that, and I was like, oh, good, yeah. We're going to see a new Giro. He doesn't care about the code anymore. He's just going to come out and kick some butt. And he effectively got squashed and got the code back anyway. I was like, aha, okay, maybe next week. As far as Waller goes, and again, here's another one of these callbacks, and please forgive me if I'm jumping over the moon here, but at least in what I've seen of him to this point, he sort of is the best parts of the Bobby Heenan, Mr. Perfect combination, where he can talk for himself in a very intelligent and smarmy and arrogant and whimsical way. And he also has the physical gifts a la a Mr. Perfect, where you also buy him as a very credible, although not averse to doing dastardly and heely things, but like, he could take somebody one-on-one if he wanted to. And I think he's a really special formula that, yeah, even if he doesn't win, and I won't be heartbroken either way, certainly someone that can be something to build around as they start to give him more. And then my last blurb on Braun, and then Sean, feel free to chime back in, is Braun, for all of his goods and bads, reminds me of the first college football coach I worked for as a student manager, where when I first met him, yelling was his thing. And boy, he would scare the tar out of you the first time you met him, because he was just, he had that yelling voice that you were like, oh geez, like, people two towns over better get out of the way. And then when you realize that all he does is yell, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like, oh, here he goes. He's going to yell again about something. And I feel like Braun is stuck in that rut that if he's not destroying styrofoam set pieces, hulking up and throwing his straps off or yelling, well, what is he? And I think he's got to quick find that next level. I'm trying to think of like maybe like a Psycho Sid, where he sort of mismatched the screaming and then sort of the very low whispering, where it's like, I'm kind of more afraid that you're not yelling because what do you know that I don't know? And I don't think Braun has found that second gear yet. And I hope that Shawn Michaels and some of those guys will get with him to get there.
There used to be, in the days when there were infomercials on all the damn time, a lot of these motivational speakers in the wake of that dude who had all the question marks all over his suit. Carlton Sheets, was that him? But there were all these weirdos doing that. And there were at least a couple of them who, when they spoke, they would do this thing with their hand kind of out in the, I don't know, the stereotypical Italian way, but they would move it forward when they were saying something important. But these guys, they saw that made something seem important, so they did it on every syllable of every word. And so it was like, well, nothing you say is important now because everything's important enough to do that on. And that is exactly, these are the guys I think of when I see Braun out there yelling. And which is why, even though it was a weird thing to see, seeing Braun fish was like my favorite thing I've seen of Braun in a while. And like, I've never found somebody most enjoyable when I was just watching them fish, in part because I have a gripping, serious phobia of fish. And it still was my favorite. I've never said that on this podcast. I didn't think I ever would. Here it is, folks. That's a real thing. It sucks. It's called ichthyophobia. It's the worst. But, and yet, even despite that, it was by far my favorite thing that I have seen Braun Breaker do. Okay, I'm oversharing tonight, so stick around. You're going to hear some weird stuff about what's in my head. Sean, if you got another one, go ahead.
Yeah, well, first going back, I will say, Nate and Bruce, I do miss you guys too. You guys are awesome. I go back and listen to pretty much every show, so I didn't want to leave you guys out. I didn't want you to think I was leaving you out, so I apologize. I love you guys too. I miss y'all. Can't wait to talk to y'all hopefully very soon. About Braun, I did love the fishing stuff because it was something different with him. I actually had two more quick questions, Kelly, if that's okay.
Oh yeah, we're hanging out. We got a little time. It's a two-man booth, so yeah, we're good.
Okay, so the first I wanted to bring up Roxanne and her. I know it was like a small, it was a small promo, but I really loved it, man. I love a person talking about how much the title means, the history of the title, how much they want to live up to the history of the title, how much they want to keep working and just work so hard to hold on to it, and just in such a subtle way that she did. I loved every second of that, even if it was like 2 minutes or whatever it was. It just made the title feel special, and all the people, the women that have had it, like Bailey and Sasha and Charlotte, and it just, I don't know. Like I said, it wasn't a lot, but it was very impactful to me. What did y'all think about that? I really liked it.
This was, for me, without a doubt, my favorite Roxanne Perez character moment. I echo just what you're saying, because, like, it feels weird to say because there wasn't a lot here. It was meat and potatoes, babyface stuff, but she did it so well. And in these positions, talking these kind of segments, she's not been soaring yet. She has seemed a little rehearsed, a little shiftless, a little, I don't want to say lost. Lost is a little strong, but it's meandering, maybe. I'm not sure, but it hasn't been coming together. Tonight it came together. I thought the words given to her were good ones. She laid it out for a babyface champion who knows that the weight of the world's on their shoulders. And I thought she took it and ran. And if she's getting that, if she starts to nail that in a backstage segment, in a backstage setting, then they're going to be able to start putting more of this out in front of a live crowd. And she's had some struggles in front of the live crowd, but now we can see her trending in the right way. We can see that all this work is being done with her, and she's not just going to be a really great hand that you can trust in big spots. She could be something really special if they can get everything right on the other part of professional wrestling. Kevin.
Yeah, and I my only note on that was she spoke frankly and very supportive of the women's roster. And I think, again, it's another one of those that speaks to this theme of sort of mission statements and sort of declarative, here's who I am and here's what I'm about. I think the other thing that I think, too, Kelly, in support of what you just said is, I think, I don't know that I'm the only one that forgets how young she is. And I know that when they first brought her over, and they talked about her being the most current women's champion, and I'll say ROH, but it was either ROH or Impact. But like, she was the outgoing champion before she came to NXT. And I just feel like when we hear the word champion, we immediately maybe ascribe that to, if not middle 20s, upper 20s, you know what I mean? Like, something a bit more aged than she is. And so, not that it absolves her a sort of being more rehearsed and more practiced prior to sort of today's interview. But again, let's not lose sight of the fact that she is still very, very young age-wise. And of course, I don't care how good of a performer you are, you know, those bright lights turn on, and there's always that immediate sort of butterfly, like, oh, we're doing this for real now. And I'm very excited to see where she takes the championship, because she certainly has big shoes to fill. And I know we'll talk about Toxic Attraction at some point later on, but the way that the two of them were talking, it seemed like they almost slipped and said Mandy, but they sort of took it that way. And so I think they're sort of trying to wash their hands of just that name in general. And so it'll be interesting to see what direction Roxanne takes it. And I'm confident it'll be a very good one. So
I was certainly not surprised that the first segment that they had since then was backstage, that they didn't put them in front of the crowd.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I
wasn't
expecting them in front of camera. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, the last thing I was going to bring up, and first I want to say, Kevin, when you brought up me on SmackDown, or talking about SmackDown Friday, I'm curious what you thought, because I had a lot to say that night, because I was fired up, and in a good way, hopefully. I hope it wasn't a bad way, but I'm just curious what you guys thought, because it was fun. That
no,
was a
listen,
fun show, Zach and Darren.
Every time you're on. And the fact that you were on deck to Reverend Keith, you guys were like that 1-2 combo that you just look forward to. So no, and here's the deal. I love when callers are fired up, because that means that something that is going on has moved you enough to dial a phone number and come share those thoughts. And so I loved everything you had to say. I was sort of nodding right along with you as I was driving home, and I pulled up into my driveway and you're still sort of in the middle of your question. So I can tweet at you once I finish hearing your spiel.
Cool. And I'm actually excited too, because I'm getting to go to Raw in Nashville Monday. I'm really excited about it, because they've got a good show, you know, built up already, and so that'll be fun. I'm throwing that out there. I told Wade I'm going to go, so hopefully I'll get to call in and talk to him about my experience there. But my last question I was going to bring up was going back to with the Carmelo Apollo match next week. I'm curious what you guys thought, because I know Nate and Bruce were talking a lot about, especially last week when Carmelo beat Axiom, was he just feels like he's doing good stuff, but he does feel kind of like they said very, very well, I think, in a holding pattern right now in NXT. And I think the goal usually for Vince was, well, we're going to have, if we're wanting to bring somebody up to the main roster, we're going to have them lose to whoever and then move up that way. I really think Carmelo has to beat Apollo, because to me, Apollo, I have nothing against Apollo personally. I think he's good in the ring. He has good matches. I just think he's just not a good character. And I think Carmelo has to win this match. And then because I still think Grayson could actually win the title from Braun. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think it's very possible. And if that did happen, I don't see much else for Carmelo to do now that he's a heel. I just think he needs to win, have a big win over Apollo, and then move up to the main roster and have something there, because he fits perfectly for what they're doing on either Raw or SmackDown. And I think he'd be such a good addition to what those shows are. So I was kind of just wanting to hear what you guys thought about the match. Should Carmelo win? Because I think he totally should, but I was curious what you guys thought. Kelly, it's always good to talk to you. Kevin, good to talk to you, man. It's always just a pleasure. You know, I hope you guys had a great Christmas, and hope you all have a happy New Year, and I'll talk to you hopefully very soon. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
Yes, and thank you. It was a good Christmas for me, a great one, actually. A quiet one, kind of, and it's actually not over. Like, there's still a chance for my Christmas to suck, because I got more Christmas coming up. So, you know, the second half of it could flop, but I guess we'll find out. On Wednesday. Oh, my God, that's tomorrow. Okay. I should probably remember what the question is, but I don't.
About Carmelo. And
Carmelo. Yes. And, you know, I'm fine with him winning. I don't if he's moving up, I don't think it matters at all what the outcome of this is. I think that the idea that he needs to do the job on the way up is definitely not something – it's something weird that this company does as a holdover to the territory days. And I get it. You're doing a solid to somebody in the brand when – even though we're not in the territory days, it's still worthwhile to do that job because that person gets to benefit from it. But then wherever you're going, you're not even going to talk about that match. And they're not – they wouldn't talk about that match with Apollo, and I don't think it would matter to fans who see it. And way, way, way fewer people see NXT than see Raw and SmackDown. So I just don't think it matters that much. If they think there's something to be gained by Apollo going over, if there's something interesting they want to do with him, if he's going over Carmelo Hayes, then they should do it. I just think they should go ahead and do it. But if they're not going to do anything with Apollo, then by all means, have Carmelo win on his way out. I think it's odd that so few have been allowed to win on their way out unless they were really doing something with them, like Alexa. Not Alexa, Asuka being undefeated on her way up and then getting to continue that story. I don't think it matters who wins the match. Now, I'm saying this only under the assumption that Carmelo is moving up soon. And I do think that the only reason he seems to be in a holding pattern is because they want to keep him on TV, but they don't want to do anything super major with him because that moment where it's right to move him up, once it's there, they're going to want to capitalize and not have to break him out of any important storylines. So yeah, love him. Love him as a character more than Apollo by far, and I like him better as a worker, even though I like Apollo as a worker quite a bit. I just really, really think the world of Carmelo Hayes. So, but I just don't think that it matters who wins. Kevin.
Yeah, I don't know that I do either. And I guess the way, as you were talking, my thought was, okay, yeah, good for Carmelo to get some momentum from the hometown crowd on his way out if he wins. But if they're trying to do something with Apollo in NXT, then he might need to win more. But I agree with you in speaking to Sean's assessment that he seems to be in a holding pattern. I almost wonder if there was a window 3, 4, 5 weeks ago where they were ready to bring him up and something happened. They're like, oh, no, not yet. And it's like, oh, now we've got to find some more stuff for him to do until the next time. And so it really did sort of feel like it has felt like perhaps there was a missed window that they're still working on. And then the other part of me wonders with the Rumble right around the corner, are they going to sort of keep him? And I hate that, you know, I don't want to make it sound like he's not doing good work with the holding pattern thing, but maybe they want to keep him productive and in shape and keeping his lungs about him in NXT, and then he's one of the Royal Rumble entrants, and that sort of is his break-in, and he gets a few acrobatic eliminations there. I think that could happen as well. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and if they want to do it with Hayes, he wouldn't even have to be one of the guys who comes in and eliminates anybody. Like, by all means, give him one token elimination. Have him eliminate Otis, I don't know. But have him, if he is in the Rumble, I think he's the kind of guy who benefits by having, like, a Kofi Rumble. Like, have him in there for a while and come up with some clever ways to avoid elimination. And you could also do the thing they did with Shannon Moore and, who was it? Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore, where every time Matt Hardy almost got eliminated in Royal Rumble, I want to say 2003, Shannon Moore was out there making sure that he stayed in one way or another. So Hardy was one of the Iron Men of the match. I would love to see Carmelo be one of the Iron Men of the match. And I would love to see part of the reason for that be Trick messing with stuff. I know that Hayes is further along than Trick, and it makes sense to move Hayes up and maybe do some more stuff with Trick, but I like them so much together I just don't want them to split up. I just really don't. Anything more on their dynamic, Kevin?
No, I would just echo that. But yes, I think the sum of their togetherness is far better than either of their athleticisms apart. And they sort of, their gimmick is the togetherness. So I agree. I don't want them breaking them up. And I think for whatever development, you still might want to get out of Trick. So then let him work main event matches after Raw and SmackDown go off the air and get him some ring time that way. But he's got to be the, I'll say manager, but the attaché that can take a bump, that can give a working punch, that can get physical where you're not worried about him, but can be more of the hype man mouthpiece that really sort of complements what Carmelo does.
Three other matches we didn't talk about tonight. Well, we kind of surfed around the edges of Fallon Henley versus Kiana James, talked about the bar itself, but we didn't really talk about the match. Henley over James in 5-11. I thought that it was perfectly competent stuff. A little surprised Fallon went over just because Kiana is the more interesting of the two options to win this and then steal a bar that has been in the Henley family for generations. But I get it. They're doing something with Brooks Jensen. Once again, they're asking Brooks Jensen to do a lot of acting. I don't understand why this keeps happening. Lyra Valkyria defeats Lash Legend, 3 minutes, 29 seconds, a quickie, but I thought a pretty good match. They had a somewhat ugly moment near the end, but I thought for the most part this was a good small versus big. I thought both of them wrestled within themselves very well. I have a lot of really nice things to say about Valkyria, and that will continue to be true. I saw a lot of her stuff on NXT UK. I'm a big fan. And I thought this match served to show kind of that that Lash is really getting better every time out there. And the matches are still short, but they're getting tighter. They're getting smarter. And she really is wrestling like the brute that that she should be and the character that can make her money. Julius Creed versus J.D. McDonough was your wonderful technical opener. 9 minutes and 51 seconds. Creed goes over McDonough. Now, that's what I wanted to see. I just didn't think I would see it because Creed is a tag team wrestler. But they really like Julius Creed, and they are correct to do so because I sure as hell do too. Any of these three matches capture you, Kevin?
Yeah, so I'll in quick order. So the Henley versus James, I really didn't see a way James wasn't going to win that because her kind of like money in the bank, like giving her possession of the bar then becomes the bargaining chip for an even bigger match later down the road where like that's the thing you're fighting for. And so I guess I assumed that that's the way it was going to go. I agree with you that they're asking a lot of old Mr. Jensen here and he's trying to play the, I don't know if forlorn lover is the right term, but he's certainly playing the, well, yeah, but she's nice to me, even though she's a jerk, but I came up with the, and so I guess we just have to kind of wait to see how that plays out. I also liked Lyra, and I agree with you. One of the few notes I wrote on that match was that Lash, I think, is getting better every time. There weren't, and I also made the note on that very weird takedown right before the finish. But other than that, like the gaps aren't as big in the connecting moves. She seems to really feel better. I think the thing is when you're sort of average height or maybe even smaller, you've kind of been that way like for either ever or for a while. And like tall folks, and I am one, so I can speak to that, where you hit a spurt at some point and you haven't really like, I'll say, grown into your body. And I think especially in a ring where there are some people I'm sure that know how many steps it takes them to get from one rope to the other or, you know, that sort of thing, when you're still trying to figure out how to use a height that worked really well in basketball and a very large playing surface to whatever this is, an 18 by 18 or 20 by 20 square, there's a little bit of adjustment that needs to happen. And I think that she has just been getting better. And you're right, the matches have been short. But I'm okay with that. And I think you know, I tell my students a lot this, that are student athletes who kind of come asking about playing time and then how to approach their coaches. And I tell them the same thing every time: maximize the minutes you're given. And that's how you show a coach you deserve more, is to do the best you can with whatever they give you. And I think she's definitely doing that. I like that they sort of have dropped her lashing out speaking segment and given her more to do in ring. And so I'm kind of excited to see where she goes as she continues to get better. And then, yeah, that opening match, I actually was very impressed. And I think that McDonough deserves a lot of credit. They wrestled a very big man, feel each other out match for most of that match. And I was really impressed that both were able to sort of carry that style and splash in sort of the acrobatics when needed and when necessary. And I thought they had some really good chemistry together. And I too was happy to see Julius win. And I'm excited to kind of see where that goes. My only other comment on that match, poor Brutus, if he didn't have that towel, he didn't really know what was going on out there. And then other than waving the towel as sort of some hype, he could have stayed back in the locker room just as well, and it would have been just the same match. And then the other thing I noticed too, and this could be a couple of weeks old, but now that Julius has shifted from the singlet to just the shorts, he doesn't have the straps to be his Hulk up moment. And so I noticed that he threw the elbow sleeve a la sort of Rock before the People's Elbow to do his big finisher. And so I thought that was sort of an interesting transition because he doesn't have the straps anymore. But other than that, I thought that was a really good opener. I thought that was a really great way to start the show. And I look forward to seeing what else they sort of do on that angle.
Yes, match of the night for sure. And yeah, now Julius is going to have to go on to lose to Sangha and Veer, because those guys are probably going to be the next champions on this show. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Only one tonight, in part because we always get one from Kevin Catani, but Kevin Catani is here talking to me right now, so he didn't have to send in an email. This is from JB from Detroit. The Oral Mensah debut vignettes are giving me a No Way Jose meets early NXT Andrade Cien Almas vibes. What do you guys think? As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah.
Can I please jump in first?
Absolutely.
Please. Because yeah. I think he stole my Apple Notepad note. Because the only note that I wrote on that was, this guy is No Way Jose / early Andrade / early Damian Priest with this. The nightlife is the best life. And I'm like, oh, buddy, it didn't really work for either any of those guys. So we've got to find a new shtick for you very, very quickly, because as big a fan of No Way Jose as I am, I have his action figure in my office. That didn't work out so well. And you see how they had to take Priest and Andrade and make them both more serious, because the whole jacuzzi / nightclub / whatever is just not it. So, yeah, I felt exact same thing.
I thought it did kind of work for Priest, but that's not what they did when he moved up. But I did also have the same thought, which is, why does wrestling keep going back to partiers when it has such a long and storied history of not working? That said, Oral Mensah is so cool. He's so cool, guys. When I grow up, I want to be Oral Mensah. That is how cool I think he is. He was one of my favorites in the mid-card, the very, very large mid-card that was NXT UK. That was like 90% mid-card. I guess that's kind of the main roster too at times, but I digress. But I just think that if anyone can make it work, he can. I also don't know how much of that is going to be presented as a devil may care, or if it'll just be part of the man he is, and maybe he can bring that into things at times. If they don't make it overwhelming like they did with Jose, they might be fine. But with Jose, it was like it was in almost every move he did, and he would be they wouldn't have any idea what to do with him. So he'd lose a feud. He'd be off TV for like 6 months at times. And then he would come back. Like, we talked about him on this podcast, and it just seemed like, oh, man, what are they ever going to do with him? And they didn't know. And I don't actually know where he's wrestling now. I assume he is, because wrestlers so rarely quit the business, but I don't know where he is. So I'm bullish on Oro Mensah, but color me worried that they're going party guy with him. We've got,
and you know who else I got a little bit of a vibe from was, oh geez Louise, not Keanu. I knew I was going to mess that up. The guy who was the finest. What? Why am I blanking on his name now?
Oh, Kona Reeves.
Reeves. Yes, yes, yes. I got a little bit of Kona Reeves from him too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really liked Kona Reeves in a.
I did too. I'm sad he's gone.
Yeah, I thought that he was a valuable lower card gatekeeper in the same way that Cassius Ohno was. Perfectly decent. And I loved the approach to the character. Like, it's a little subtle for the average wrestling fan, but a guy who's poor and who's cheap and who's lower class, trying to present himself as upper class and, like, taking lower class clothing and trying to cut it up to make it look, I think it was lost on a lot of people what he was trying to do, or what the company was trying to do in his presentation. And I don't know. I'm still hoping he just shows up one of these days, loses another 90-second match, and it's fine, because that's what he's there to do. Backstage stuff with Schism, Tony D Stax, Alba Fire, Toxic Attraction. I guess we could cover that a tiny bit more if we wanted. And Isla Dawn. Toxic Attraction. First outing without being able to specifically mention Mandy. It was weird because they talked about them as a group. And there was another thing they said where they had to acknowledge that that this was a bigger group. It's so weird how, I mean, the news was so big, it was really easy to get used to this person not being there. A lot of times when somebody gets turfed, I'm not used to it for a while, and I'm still kind of just assuming they're going to show up again. But that's didn't happen with Mandy, because the firing was so public and so known by everybody. So, I thought they did okay here. Mandy could be spotted in the back, showing highlights of these two women. And I'm looking at these shots, seeing if Mandy snuck into any of them. And she did, just a couple of times that I saw. I don't know if there were more than that, but she was on the periphery of the shot every now and then. As usual, I thought that Gigi was pretty fine on the mic, and JC was kind of okay. And they didn't hint that it would have to be a group again. They could do it. They could take, like, Tiffany Stratton and wedge her into this and continue the group. But I really like Tiffany as a single and the things that offers her storyline wise. And I don't know that these two really need another leader. I think they can be fine unless they really, really, really just want a three woman faction. After tonight's outing, I'm done assuming that they're going to bring in a third. Rather than think about who that would be, I think I'm to the question, are they going to do it at all, Kevin?
Was that the handoff?
It was.
Okay, fair enough. No, I agree with you. I don't know that they need a third. I think certainly if they wanted to, they know that the higher-ups know that Gigi and JC can play well with a third person. But I think, even though their hand has been forced by Mandy's firing, I think you give them the ball and let them run with it. See if they can't kind of carry themselves as a tag team and keep the Toxic Attraction thing going. And certainly, you know, again, they gave their own mission statement in in their package there. And, you know, I think that there still is some flesh on the bone for them versus the current champs, Carter and Chance. And if not, let them start building up a couple other tag teams. I know that they certainly work well together. I think if you let Gigi be the mic person more than JC, then that's a good formula verbally anyway. And I think they're both talented enough to be very reputable tag team contributors. I think, too, maybe this could be a good excuse to maybe start thinking about bringing them up to either SmackDown or Raw. You know, maybe if you just sort of want to disassociate yourself from Toxic Attraction altogether on the NXT side, you can bring them up and enter them as a natural tag team on one of the main roster shows. But either way, I think this is a good chance to give them the ball and let them see what they can do with it.
All right, folks, I believe that is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games. I hope your holiday didn't suck, if you had a holiday indeed. And I hope the one coming up is one that is safe for you. So there you go. Kevin, who are you?
I'm Kevin P. Catani, a.k.a. The Professor, but you can find me on Twitter at KP Catani. Always love chatting wrestling and anything of the sort. Also big into Magic the Gathering, so if you want to nerd with me there, you're welcome to do that as well. And I also hope that if you celebrated, you were able to spend time with people you care about. Yeah, travel safe. I know my wife's family is going to be on their way back from Central America tomorrow, and I don't know what airline they're on, but I know all kinds of airlines are canceling all kinds of flights. So if you are traveling, travel safely, and happy new year to you all. And hopefully I'll get to talk to you guys again real soon.
All right, folks, cheers. And we will see you in 7. All righty.
Nice. And we're out. I think I need a more formal "and we're out" from you. I think we need to lean into your acting experience to give us a better cut.
Oh, we on a weekly basis. When I do my show with Tom 8 years back, normally I try to do a callback to a joke as a stinger. That's normally what I do because I get goofy. We get real goofy on that show.
That show is also very well known for goofy, but in all of the best ways.
Yep. Yeah.
I do. Right. And I do love, Brian Alston's interaction with you guys. I had a chance to meet him earlier in the year, and he is just such a cool guy. And so I love that he sort of has made him, you know, he's kind of the unofficial third member of the group. So,
oh yeah. You know, I would have met him if I would have gotten this gig when I lived in Phoenix. You know, I would have seen him probably on a semi-regular basis.
He's all around.
Yeah. I would have had to, but I had to, move 2000 miles back home in order to meet Brian Alston, who I lived within 10 miles of for quite a while.
Isn't life funny that way?
Who knows? Maybe I sold him a TV while I was out there.
Probably did, or something, something electronic.
Yeah. I don't know what part of Phoenix he lived in.
He lives on the north end, because I know we were staying sort of just outside of Phoenix and Chandler, and where we met at a Mexican restaurant seemed to be equidistant for us both. So,
okay. Sounds good. Rocking.
Well, thanks again for calling. It's always so much fun to be on, and I love getting to interact with you, so thanks.
Oh, yeah. I didn't it was going to be a little tough. I was maybe going to have to do a solo show if you weren't here, which would have been fine.
Well,
but
I also had my fingers crossed after I was able to say yes, that maybe you also were able to call in a couple of favors and have Tom come back and be a third guy. I was like, what if he called old Tom Step up? But
I considered Tom, but Tom really wanted to be heavy backup on this. And if he came back, he wanted it to be for something kind of important or whatever. In the meantime, he just wants to focus on Bonus Point and then doing 8 years back with me. But then when I did, when Greg had me host Wrestling Night in America,
Sure.
A couple of weeks
ago. Was there
ago.
Any other choice? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's like we're a package deal. We just have a banter.
You are Carmelo and Trick.
Indeed. Lofty.
Now, I have a
lofty hopes.
I believe every word of that. I believe every word of that. Have you been in touch with Justin? I know I tried to tweet at him pretty regularly, but I don't see him as active on Twitter anymore, and I don't know if you guys still keep in touch or not.
We don't. We any keeping in touch with Justin was always on Twitter. But the one of the group that I would regularly keep in touch with, even if they were completely gone from the site, is Tom.
Of course.
Yeah, there's just a we're a little closer in age. Like the guys are so young that are on the show right now. And we have stuff in common. We can talk wrestling and stuff like that. But with Tom, it's just with the work we've done.
No, you can tell there's
film,
a different level. Yeah.
Yeah, and the stuff like that we've done together, it's real easy. And there's a level of idiocy in our humor sensibilities that's really, really similar. There's a lot of that too. So.
Well, I'm gonna say it again, and I'm gonna keep my fingers crossed. And I know that's COVID is not over, but I'm hopeful that it is more in the rear view than not. And I would love to help plan it, but I really think it'd be cool if we could get Wade on board with like a TorchCon, something like in the Twin Cities for year one, and try to get the podcasters and any fans and like sort of just find a hotel that will let a bunch of wrestling nerds come like meet and do some live podcasting and that sort of thing.
Right.
I think that'd be so cool to try to organize. And especially kind of, you know, starting it in your guys' neck of the woods sort of make logistics easier that way.
Yeah.
But I certainly would love to help plan it, and I think it's doable. But
yeah, like there's been – I've done a number of podcasts with Wade, and it's like just drive the six blocks and do it live together. Like
yeah.
We live really, really close to each other. When we went to – No, it wasn't Full Gear that we did a show right after.
I thought it was a SmackDown or something where you guys went together. Because I remember you were the number two on that show.
Yep. Yeah, it happened for that. Recently. And then it happened for when we saw Mick Foley's comedy show at the Mall of America. Because, you know, we live within 5 minutes of the Mall of America
right.
And on the fourth floor. And the fourth floor doesn't have much on it, and there's only one exit, one entrance to the fourth floor. Like, the three floors is the whole building, but the fourth floor is just only on one end of the building. And it's got the comedy club there. And we saw him there, and we got, like, these VIP seats that Mick left for Wade because they know each other. And then there was a meet and greet after, but we got to basically just budge the entire line and go in and talk to him just two on one. It was just the three of us talking for like half an hour. And the guy who worked there was accommodating, but he knocked on the door a few times. He's like, Mick, you got to get out to these people who paid for the meet and greet.
We've got people who paid. Yeah.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, Wade and I are just there. And then we went our separate ways, went home, and then he calls. He's like, should we just do a show about this now? And I'm like, hell yeah. So, half an hour after seeing him, we just jumped online and did a show.
Just because you mentioned it quick, and I want to be respectful of your time, but I wanted to see how you're feeling about the Mall of America shooting thing. I saw you tweet about that.
Oh,
I didn't know. Have you guys been given any more information? Have they debriefed you guys?
It wasn't like that because, you know, it was late at night, not super late, but I want to say the shooting happened around somewhere between 7 and 8, in Nordstrom. And, we were not in Nordstrom, but we were going that direction, and we weren't going to go into Nordstrom. Nordstrom is one of the four big places on the four corners. And and then the next one after Nordstrom is Macy's, and it's always most convenient for me to park on the side that has Macy's on it. So almost every time I go to the mall, which is nearly almost every week. I walk in through Macy's, and then I go into the rest of the mall proper. So I don't know that I've ever gone into Nordstrom other than to see my best friend from high school who works in the coffee shop that is inside Nordstrom that has kind of become its own restaurant. Like, it's actually one of the destination places to eat in the mall, of which there are some.
Wow.
But so we, at first, they don't give you any information. There's no time for that. It's there's an alarm that goes overhead, and it says, emergency, the Mall of America is under lockdown. Please seek shelter in a store immediately. And then there's one more alarm, and then it says that again. We were on the third floor. We were 5 minutes from getting to Macy's and walking out of the building and driving home.
Oh,
we were 5 minutes from there. And so we didn't, where we were, it's very loud. Like, the mall is loud. There's a shit ton of people there, especially like before Christmas. And so it was Kathy and I, and then our younger daughter, Miette, and it was the three of us walking around, and we just kind of, it was very confusing because we, people on the other side, like, the mall's got two big halls, and then in the middle between the halls, you can see down all the way down the floors. It's just, it's stunning. Like, I still think it's cool. But the big food court was opposite us. There are restaurants all over the mall, but there's a food court that's just all fast food. And from there, we just saw a sea of young people just like yelling and running for places to hide, because in the food court, there's nothing. There is nowhere to hide.
It's pretty wide open.
Mm-hmm. And so Kathy and I were, the three of us were right next to one of the many escalators, and because there was nowhere for us to, we were right next to the mini golf course because we have one of those, and there's nowhere to hide in the mini golf course either. There's no doors, there's no anything. And so we ran downstairs down the escalator, and the closest place was the Wahlburgers that went up like a year or two ago. And we had eaten somewhere else just minutes earlier, and we're inside Wahlburgers. We are the last people to be let in. There's a dude who's just like, all right, you three, then we got to lock the door. And I'm like, and we didn't know what was going on because we didn't totally hear what was said overhead. We just know that other people heard it. And I made out the word shelter, and I thought I made out the word lockdown. And then we heard that that was indeed what it was. So there was about, between the people who were already eating in Wahlburgers and then the rest of us who ran in there and the staff, there was probably around 75 to 100 of us inside Wahlburgers.
Wow.
That
can probably only, what's the fire code? Probably 50 people.
Maybe more. It's pretty big. It's one of the bigger restaurants in the mall. It might be more than that. It's not the biggest mall. There's one restaurant there, Twin City Grill, that's probably like 200, 300 people.
So the only Wahlburgers we have here in Dubuque is in the Hy-Vee.
Okay. Wow. Yep. This one, this one's a big one. And occasionally the Wahlbergs go there for events and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was, they locked the door, and then it was, and it's still confusing. Like, we didn't know what was going on. And then we hear one of the employees, okay, and now lock the back door too so nobody can get in. And I'm just like, it was a freaking shooting. This was a shooting. That is when it hit me, what it must be. And physically, if there hadn't been so many people there, we probably would have heard the shooting because we were close enough in proximity to it that we could have heard it because it was at the Nordstrom and we were a little bit away from the Nordstrom, but not that far. My best friend from high school, he heard it loud and clear. And so for as confused and afraid as we all were in Wahlburgers, for life, it was awful because he had to lock down in the coffee shop, but they kind of have this open entrance. So it was a bunch of people hiding in a very small space. And then eventually we found out that it was a specific dispute between like 5 to 9 dudes. And it was a targeted attack, and it probably was gang related. That's still conjecture, but people who know the people involved have been saying that's likely what happened. And so I didn't find that out until after the fact, like after we were home, it was like the next day. But even in retrospect, I felt so much better knowing that we were not being targeted.
It wasn't just some yahoo, right?
Yeah. Like it was never going to be two dudes who ran into the mall and shot the place up. They went after somebody and they killed him. And the guy did die. Like it was, they did kill a guy. And then one other person got grazed by a bullet, but I don't have any information on whether that person was targeted or not. I still am pretty sure that they haven't released the name of the victim, even though the victim was 19. But we did find out that like all the guys have been apprehended. Like it took some time.
But
as far as I know, 5 guys have been apprehended and they're still asking, are there more? There's obviously a lot of cameras. So
I was
going to
say, it's such
to...
a public place. Like you're not going to hide.
Yeah. I'm the biggest mall in the world. Like you're going to be seen by somebody. So.
Well, and as soon as I heard that happened, once I sort of got through the, well, I hope everybody's okay, is like, I don't know. I don't think it's still recording, but there is a Mall Cop episodic show on Hulu about the Mall of America. And
really?
I forget what it's called, but I know I've watched a few episodes, but it literally is like, here's a day in the life of the mall cops of the Mall of America. And it like literally is.
I had no idea that existed. I'm not surprised.
If you have Hulu, look it up.
Wow.
Yeah. If you have Hulu, look it up. I don't know if it's still actively shooting, but it makes for a good, if you just need background noise while you're doing something else.
Yeah.
And you can look up every once in a while and see antics. I know one of the episodes, Sarah Palin came to like sign books. And so, of course, just like in wrestling, these people try to find the craziest people in line that have, like, body painted, you know, that sort of thing. So it's worth a look if you got nothing else going on.
Wow. I like seeing them all on certain places so I can nerd out and be like, well, that's not really what that is. Like when Tom and I were forced to watch the Mighty Ducks 3 so we could be on a podcast about it. Which is something that really happened like a year or two ago. And
I did not have that on my bingo card, by the way.
There's a bunch of scenes in the mall where they're just it all back to back where the kids are just having fun at the Mall of America. And one of them goes on a ride and then he pukes afterwards in one of the many garbages in the mall. And a mall cop is like, all right, take it outside right this way. And I'm like, dude, where you're standing, it's like half a mile to the closest exit. you're going to be walking.
Yeah, you're like square in the middle.
Yep. Yeah, right. They were right in the middle of what at the time was Camp Snoopy and is now branded Nickelodeon Universe. And it is very far in the middle of that amusement park to get to any major exit. It's not close, but that's what they did.
It's like, go ahead, get on out of here.
Right.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm not going to write in and say that's a mistake.
Yeah. Well, don't out them for their cheesy acting, but I'm glad you guys are okay. I'm sure that was, if not scary, definitely unnerving to know what the hell was going on. So.
Yeah, harrowing, I think, is the word. Because it was like, the mall is massive. Like, there's no way to explain it to people who have not been there, but it is just so stupidly large. And even being a quarter of the way down from Nordstrom, there were like probably several thousand humans in between the guys who killed the guy and us. It just was not that likely, even if it was a terrorist attack, unless it was very coordinated and a ton of people were involved. And, you know, we were all on our phones, so we were getting little bits of information every now and then. And it was probably about half an hour or 40 minutes into the 90 minutes that we were stuck in Wahlburgers that we started to get piece together enough information to see that it probably was targeted. Like, they didn't want to give out too much information and then have it be wrong, but it just seemed like they were kind of speaking in this codified language that that it wasn't anything for most of us to worry about, and that perhaps the guys had fled the scene right away, but until they're sure, they don't want to release a bunch of people and then have them get popped in the head. So
how did they tell you it was okay to go? Did like a police officer come by, or they just made another PA announcement?
There was a PA announcement that said, what's going to happen is that we are off lockdown, but we are closing all of the stores, even though they were supposed to be open. Like, just like the only thing that was supposed to be open anymore by the time lockdown was over was restaurants and the movie theater, but they closed all of them. So what they were doing was going floor by floor. They released the people on the first floor, but they had to be escorted by police in groups to their parking lots. And then with us, by the time they got to us, they were confident enough that nobody was in the area and nobody was coming back, and at this point they knew how targeted it was, that they just let the second floor go. And then whenever we were out of there, they let the third floor go. Obviously, it was a nightmare getting out of there. We were going to leave at a time when a lot of people were still at the mall, but instead we left after the whole first floor had gone, and the middle of, you know, in the middle of where the second floor people were. Thankfully, I know the place so well. I knew exactly where I was parked. It was really easy to find, so we did okay. But it was stressful for a while because, I mean, we were still, even though got out to the car, we were still on the mall grounds for like another half an hour trying to get out of there.
Oh, I believe it. Heck yeah.
And the mall normally is about a 6-minute drive to my house. But the whole ordeal was very long. And I wasn't really calm until we had driven far away from the mall, and then way more calm when the three of us walked into home. And you'll understand this part. Like, I wasn't really all that scared for myself, but like the fact that my 15-year-old daughter was there, the idea of her being cut down at 15 just really pissed me off.
Everything hits different when you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything hits different when you have kids.
And this is the daughter, actually. She wasn't scared at all. Like, she felt inconvenienced. Like, oh, this is so boring. She said, this is boring, like, 3 or 4 different times. And I was like, yeah, sheltering from possible murder is boring. I can see that. And she wasn't wrong. Like, it was boring. There was nothing to do. But it was just such a, like, she's never been locked down for a shooting either. It was the first for all three of us. But that was her reaction. If Mariana had been there, my 18-year-old daughter, it would have been a much different night. She would have been stressed out of her mind. She would not have done well. She would have probably done the worst of everybody in that Wahlburgers. In fact, we decided we weren't going to tell her that it happened at all. But
I was going to say that must have been tough, but I don't disagree.
Then we got to Christmas, and I hadn't thought to tell my siblings that I wasn't going to tell Mariana, and my sister brought it up. And she was like, and Mari didn't even know there had been a shooting at the mall. And I mentioned the shooting at the mall. And then my sister, who for some reason was not quick on the uptake, kept talking about it.
Innocently enough, but yeah.
Yep. And Mari's like, wait, the night you were there? And I'm like, we were there. And the three of us were sheltering in a Wahlburgers for like 90 minutes. And I was really hoping we weren't going to have to tell her. And But then Mari, like, clammed up and couldn't eat for a while because she knew the three of us had been there. So even after the fact, she was just not okay with it. So it's like 30 minutes of
uneasiness.
Of, like, her just having this really hard time and asking her sister about the stuff that happened. And Miette still being like, yeah, it was boring.
Good thing we got out of there because my phone was dying and it was just awful, let me tell you.
Yeah, actually, my phone was dying as we were out there, and I'm like, I'm using this to find information on what's going on. I'm not, like, I'm in no mood to
casual
talk.
Casual surfing, right?
Yeah, right, to, like, make friends in a lockdown. Like, I just want to be able to see the news here and find out what's going on. But thankfully, I was still at about 20% by the time we got out of there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it sucked. And I would say to a person in my situation, like, once we got sheltered, it wasn't really that bad. Like, it was, you know, you were thinking about it and you weren't going to feel better until it was over. But really, the part that I'll probably, even though we were in there for 90 minutes, the part that I'll remember for the rest of my life was the 30 seconds between the call and getting into the Wahlburgers. Because,
oh, sure, and being the last ones they let into the Wahlburgers.
Because nobody knew what was going on.
Sure.
And we didn't hear it very well. And even though it only took us that long, I was looking, I just quickly glanced up and down the aisles, which are really long at the mall. And
sure,
by the time we got into the Wahlburgers, like, nobody was out anymore, like, at all.
Oh, I bet not. Oh, I bet not.
Yeah, it was.
Which probably has to be an eerie feeling, too, for a mall that has millions of people go through it a year to have nobody out there in the hallway.
Yep. And I, you know, there have been times I've stayed there until close on, or I've gone to a movie that was, like, it's the last thing open there is the movie theater. And we leave the movie theater and nobody's in the mall. And that's all crazy. It just a lot of people cleaning the mall. Like, that's all there
sure.
is at the end of the night. But, so yeah, I had seen that, but it was a different kind of eerie feeling because it was dead quiet, even though there were thousands and thousands of people there.
Sure.
And
I'm like, I don't know if Titanic is the right reference, but, like, I just am even, like, my brain's going for you knowing that you were the last three to get into that Wahlburger. Like,
yeah,
there's your lifeboat, and it's like, what do you mean?
Yeah. And then they turn the lights off because they don't want anyone with a gun to be, like, easily see where people are.
Oh, sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah, all that stuff. It's like we're sitting there in the dark on our phones. And
now,
that
did anybody give you guys gruff for even, like, having phones illuminated or no?
No, they didn't. Oh, my God. The Wahlburger staff was so, so good about it. They were – it was – I hate to say it, but it seemed like they'd been through it before. They were that good.
Oh,
they were really, really –
well
put
but
together.
You know what, in fairness, I bet that's a drill they go through.
I'm sure.
In the same way that we would do a fire drill or something at, like, my university. Like, I'm sure that even my wife at her clinic, they do active shooter drills probably once a quarter. So I bet they do rehearse that.
Yeah, the mall lockdown actually just in August for a while because there was an active shooter by the Nike store. And actually, they shot into, like, a group of people. So it was messed up. There have been a few shootings there, a few murders. It's crazy what has happened in that mall. And I go there often enough that people were like, I can't believe you were there. And I'm like, I can't believe it was my first murder there. I can't believe
it. I was going to say, as often as you go, yeah, probably.
Yeah. And those things, it seems like, I mean, the terror stuff always happens around, like, nice times. And this wasn't that. This was just, like, an interpersonal.
Right.
Yeah,
I knew
it was a
gonna
personal
be there, so I went to find him. And
mm-hmm.
Right.
Because you've done this anywhere else, you might have maybe even gotten away with it. But you did
it. I was going to say IKEA or, you know, somewhere else. Could be.
You know, IKEA is like 200 yards from the Mall of America.
right across that street, right?
It's the only other thing that's like right there.
Right.
Yep.
So you're coming up that road, you either go right into the IKEA or left into the Mall of America parking lot.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Good. Well,
Kelly,
sorry. Thanks for chatting with me about it. I'm glad everything turned out well. And yep. I hope that Christmas number two goes well for you. We have a second one as well. We have to drive to Nebraska this weekend for Tegan's mom's side. And, you know, when you get a lot of people together, you never know how it goes. So I will send you good tidings, as I hope we are able to have in our side.
Yep. Oh, boy.
All right. Well, have a great, great rest of your holiday. Happy New Year, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Yep.
And I promise one of these days soon here, I'm going to get up to your store. I want to check it all out. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. I've a lot of people know about my store, and I keep saying they'll drop in, but Hopkins is not super convenient for any of my really, really close friends. So there you go.
Well, but listen, you're worth the travel. I'll say that much. There you go.
And I will agree, frankly. I am. I'm worth it.
Attaboy.
All right.
Attaboy. All right. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. See ya.